Mr. Nurse, reel 4. Now, we've still got you on point 11 to hill 112, and in a somewhat exposed position. Your support vehicles have been hit. What happened next?
Well, we were ordered to retreat. For what there was alleged to be an SS counterattack, and we were ordered to retreat. So, again, at this time, I still have Tibbet. I'm not sure. I think I might have done. I'm not sure if it was Lamont or Tibbet. Anyway, to cut a long story short, the bloody engine started giving trouble. So everyone was in a panic trying to get out of the way of an alleged counterattack, and we could only make 3-4 miles an hour out of the tank. So I think I might have been operating the radio at that time, so I got on to the OC and said, we had engine trouble and could only make 2-4 miles an hour. What should we do? And he said, I remember distinctly saying, abandon, take out the breech block and anything important, abandon the bloody thing. Well, now I was suffering from intense constipation at that time, and I thought, to hell with this. The tank had in the meantime stopped, so I got out of the tank under the rear of the engine and defecated with great difficulty. In fact, I still suffer from internal bowels now as a result of that, but that didn't go on your record. And we decided we'd go on 2-4 miles, and as it happens, we reached the Leaguer, or Lager, whichever you like to call it, with the regiment, or the squadron, about a half an hour later. We lost it, but...
So you abandoned the tank?
No, we didn't. We
decided to go on. You took it with you. And can you explain, just tell me, what would happen at a Lager...
Well, you distribute the tanks as far. Obviously, we're still worried about bombing raids, although the Luftwaffe in France almost ceased to exist. But we spread as far as possible, because the Germans, if they knew we were there, which they did, they'd send over what were known as airbursts. And that's 88mm or 105mm shells fused to explode in the air, even to hit the ground and bounce up. So unless you were in the turret or closed down, you could suffer some dreadful casualties from that. And they did bomb, stonk was the word, they did stonk us several times with airbursts.
So
it was an orchard, I remember that. So even if a high explosive shell had hit one of the apple trees, it would. But we were spread as far as possible.
And what would happen there? I believe that's where you got your fuel, ammunition, and, you know, what would happen? How was the situation, you know, that's where you'd meet up the B echelon.
Yes, right, yeah.
And what was the, you know, how did it all work, the fuel, the ammunition, the food?
Well, I must have been much stronger in those days. We used to use these German jerry cans, which I think carried 4.5 gallons. Now, a pint of water is a pound, and of course, so 10 pounds to a gallon, 40 pounds. I should think that I know I've carried with a bar across my shoulders 4 of them. And as fast as possible, because, you know, if you're hit by anything, a tracer bullet, and you're carrying petrol, and obviously filled up the tanks, replaced any ammunition we used, and that was one of the occasions when I believe the cooks got up with hot food.
And would you do any routine maintenance?
Oh, yes, clean the guns.
What sort of things would you do? Cleaning the guns?
Yeah, cleaning the guns were the most important thing.
And you did that every night, then?
No, only when possible. One or two stories I can tell you about that later on, but no, when possible. Depends whether you use the things or not, because you didn't always use them.
And where would you sleep? Would you sleep in the tank, under the tank, or on a
In a situation like that, in the tank. And you can imagine what internal piles were when you were on a little metal seat about this big. I went to the medical officer, this Captain Beamish, who was never heard of again, and reported sick to him, because I was in quite a lot of pain, believe you me. Reported to one of his medical orders, and he virtually told me to go forth and multiply, which, because they had far more serious thing to do with in my piles.
And anything else about an overnight thing? Nothing. You just sleep in the tank as best you could.
Yeah, and then an hour before first light, there'd probably be some form of reveille. The radio would probably be manned overnight. And then we'd get on net with the radios and wait for dawn and proceed to our next destination, which might have been a rest for 48 hours or it might have been another action.
Now, there seems to have been a sort of lull, a short lull, before the big battle.
Well, Goodwood.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know whether there's anything you remember from that period. They did do some operations moving forward to support infantry and, you know, various things, but most people don't seem to remember much in that period. I don't know whether you do.
The only thing I remember that particular period, that's between Hill 112 and Goodwood, was we were leaving the Ground Hill Monastery, and there was a Panther tank there that had been knocked out, and I was dead interested to get aboard this thing, but noticed saying it may have been booby trapped, so that frightened me off. But that night, a German plane came over, a single, I would imagine it was a twin-engine aircraft, dropping flares, and you feel so naked when these damn flares come down, you really do. But it was obvious a reconnaissance plane. It didn't machine gun anyone or bomb anyone, just flew over dropping flares.
Now, what do you remember of Goodwood then? That was, I think, the 18th of July.
July, yeah.
18th and 19th, yeah.
Well,
there was a big move, firstly, wasn't there, the night before or the day before?
The plan was that the 2nd 544 Yeomanry, followed by the 3rd Royal Tank Regiment, followed by the 23rd Hussars, I'm not sure about that, certainly C Squad, 544 led. In other words, the 11th Armoured Division, the Junior Division, followed by 7th Armoured Division, I think, followed by Guards Armoured Division. The idea was to put through three armoured divisions onto what was called tank country, which was rolling down or plain. That's 61 tanks to a regiment, 183 tanks. Am I right? No, that's to a regiment, so there was three times 183. There were quite a number of tanks, several hundred tanks. But no one bothered to explain to anyone. I suppose it was the fault of the logistics or planning officer of some sort. It was only one bloody bridge or road into the assembly area. So the 11th Armoured Division got through. I remember going through the white tapes where the Royal Engineers had cleared the mines. And we got onto quite open country. Ahead of us was this Borgibus Ridge with Hubert Folly at the top. And what had happened? Though there was a big bombing raid, first of all, which caused the Germans quite a lot of damage, but not as much as had been expected. I think the bombers might have been as much as a quarter of a mile out for real problems. And suddenly there were blazing tanks all around me, Nichols' tank and sundry other tanks. Jack Keatley was killed there. What had happened was there weren't very many German tanks on this ridge or behind it or wherever, but there was a battery of flat guns, 88mm flat guns. And a German divisional commander, I used to know his name, but I forgot it now, can't tell with this, he went over to the lieutenant, I think it was a senior lieutenant who was commanding this, and ordered him to use his gun, depress his guns, and fire on our tanks, you see.
Now, you weren't aware, they'd done this you weren't aware of the 88 then?
No. We knew our tanks were being hit by 88, but we certainly weren't sure where they were.
What could you see from you were display? You were in Lamont's tank by now, and you were the gunner on this day. Yeah. And what could you see as you? I mean, when a tank went up, I know it's a terrible question to ask, but what would happen when a tank was hit? Say Nichols' tank or another tank.
Well, obviously, if the petrol tank was hit, there'd be a woof of flame, and if it then sent the ammunition up, it would almost blow the turret off. I've never actually seen a turret blown off, but I've seen blazing tanks. So, and Nichols and Molyneux, I rather imagine the whole crew might have been killed.
Their tank burned?
Yeah. Most of the tanks were burning. Some were damaged, some were recovered during the night. Well then, what happened then?
How did you feel when you saw a tank? I mean, you could see it was Nichols' tank, you knew your friend was in. I mean, it's a terrible accident, but how did you feel? I mean,
well, it all happened so quickly, Peter. It's hard to feel anything, quite honestly. You obviously are saddened, depressed, but all this stuff happened so quickly, you're hardly aware of it.
Was there anything for you to fire at?
I didn't see a single target, not that night, not that day anyway. But the next day, this is where I come up.
Hang on, just finished. Yeah. Had you gone across the... there's meant to be two railways you went across all through. Had you gone across the... where were you in...
I only remember one, and that was to the south of this particular railway.
So you'd already crossed it. And you were pointing towards the wooded area of Cagney, or would you remember it more towards Hubert Folly?
No, I remember it more towards Hubert Folly.
It might be. I'm not quite familiar with where they aren't related.
Well, Hubert Folly was a hamlet on the Borgibus Ridge.
And anything else happened that day? You said, did you get the supports coming through from the other units that were meant to come through? Are they...
If we did, they were very late. I don't think the 7th Armored Division did terribly well, and then their commander was fired eventually. But that when I come back, if I
were,
may,
were you getting sorry? Were you getting any orders through the net? Either,
Yeah, we were, but nothing very definitive. Let's put it that way. Everyone was in a bit of a panic, quite honestly. We didn't expect that sort of opposition.
And how did you stop? I mean, when did you? It's always interesting when people decide to stop, because you're advancing towards a ridge. At some point, you stopped.
Well, we realised that too many of our tanks were being hit, not all of them obviously brewed up, but and I presume either the colonel or the brigade commander ordered us to stop. I mean, going on like that, we'd have lost the whole damn regiment.
Now, did you stay where you were, where you got those orders, or did you retire?
No, we stayed where we were.
And what time about was it? Was it getting towards nightfall?
It was getting towards late afternoon, I would suggest, yeah.
Did you realise you'd lost 37 odd tanks?
Not at the time, no. In fact, I think we lost rather more than that out of the 61. But go on.
It depends on which figures you use. I mean, I've not. So you stayed. What happened at night then? Did you pull back at night?
Well, this is where I've got to stop you, because this is where this business of Hubert Foley comes in. Lamont, Julian Thompson says Steel Brownlee, but Lamont was ordered to, no, was asked for to volunteer to motor fast along the ridge, to almost at the top of the ridge, to take Hubert Foley, or let's call it Hubert Foley, shall we? And he was promised support from the regiment, the brigade 25-pounders. They would put up a curtain of fire in front of us. We would advance at top speed behind this gunfire, 25-pounder gunfire, and take the village. And we did. I said this in my letter to Julian Thompson.
Now, was this on that day or
that
the next day?
That was on the evening of that day, as far as I remember. So Lamont, it was a bit of a... He wanted a medal, and he got one. He apparently, I don't know whether it was detailed or he actually volunteered, quite honestly. But anyway, the divisional artillery opened up with their 25-pounders and created a scene like Dance's Inferno about 200 yards in front of us. And moved. It was a beautifully executed operation. Moved this fire forward, and we were racing along at top speed, 25, 30 miles an hour behind it. Got into the village, and then obviously the gunfire stopped. And I remember getting to the other side of the village and got my first hit. It was dusk, and there was one of these semi-tracked German vehicles, wheels in front, tracks behind, like a white scout car, about 300 or 400 yards away. And I took a shot at it, and I hit it. That's all I remember. Then we pulled back into the village and had a sleepless night with the revolver port opened, hoping that no one was going, because tanks are extremely vulnerable. We had no infantry support. And tanks are extremely vulnerable at night.
Had you had any casualties in that attack on Hubert Foley?
Oh, that I remember, no.
I was just saying that possibly that was on the 19th, but it's it fit in with a 6 o'clock attack in the evening.
Yeah, it would,
But we don't know. Had you been aware of the that Nichols was dead? You realised Powell was dead. Powell had been killed overnight.
No, I didn't even know.
And what's the next thing you remember then?
Well, then we were put, as I wrote to Julian Thompson, had we been supported, I'm convinced, I mean, I was only a trooper, I'm talking probably, but I think had we been supported, we could have held that ridge and drove forward towards Falaise over good tank country. But that, I'll show you his letter, if you like, later on. But we were withdrawn across the railway line and leaguered on the north side of the railway line. So that was that. And then the next day, for some reason or another, stop me if you... The next day, for some reason or another, the crew were out where they were getting rations or pet. Anyway, I was on wireless watch. And we suddenly got under fire, direct fire, I would think, from, I don't know whether they were 88s or enemy tanks. And that was the one time I really lost my nerve for 20 seconds. I thought, bugger this, you know, there are shells falling all around me. There was a slit trench about 30 yards in front of me that the infantry had obviously dug. And I thought, well, it's going to be safer in that than in this tank. So I made a run for the slit trench. And again, I kid you not, I actually saw the shell that was heading straight for that slit trench. It must therefore have been low velocity, high explosion. And it failed to explode. And I was back in that turret before you could say knife. Seriously. It's one of those things you don't forget. And I can't remember what happened then.
Well, I believe you went, it may have been, you went to Ardenne Abbey, where the regiment, for 3 or 4 days, where the regiment was sort of almost rebuilt.
Well,
got
yes,
reinforced.
Oh, yes.
This may be the abbey
that's
you
right,
mentioned
that's
earlier,
right. Yeah,
but
that's right.
May not
yeah,
be as well.
Yeah.
But
no, I'm right.
You got reinforcements from various other units. How did they fit in, the reinforcements? Because you needed reinforcements
yeah,
as well, didn't you?
I have no idea, to be quite truthful, because my tank's crew was complete, you see.
And
in fact, I think two troop were complete. We were lucky.
Now, how were you fitting in with your troop? I mean, you'd not been with them that many long, but you fought now in two big actions,
mm-hmm,
really. You know, the sort of first part of Goodwood and the second part. Possibly you'd fought with them at point 112.
Sure.
How we're interested in how a crew links together and how they develop this sort of special bond, you know.
Well, they're all in the same boat. That sounds oversimplistic, I know, but we got on well. We supported each other. I think if the tank had been hit, we would have done our best to get if we'd survived, to get the rest of the boys out. I think Nichols got killed he bailed out, apparently. I only say apparently. And was alleged to have gone back to try and get the rest of his crew out. It was the last thing he did.
Was it an informal? I mean, you had an officer in there.
Yeah.
It's always strange, you know.
In those days, I obviously called him sir, but he called us by our Christian names. And he was quite strict, but I was Bob as far as he was concerned.
Would you share food with him,
yeah,
or would he have his own food?
No, share food with him, most definitely.
But there was a discipline. In other words, you know, you still did exactly what he said.
Yes, yeah.
Could you talk to him as you talk to someone else? You know, if you said sir, but could you talk to him
yeah,
normally?
Yeah, I could, yeah. We all could.
The next thing would be the advance towards the Veer Road. If you could sort of set the scene for what was happening, if you knew what was happening.
Well, I didn't, quite honestly. C Squadron, for once, weren't leading. All I remember of the Veer Road and the actions around there was that we were on the right side of a ridge and there were odd shells going around and it wasn't an action in which we lost many men or tanks, as far as I remember. Because we were close to the Americans then, as you will realise.
So, you took a lesser part. You say for once. Did squadrons start? I mean, I've heard other four. I mean, I know A Troop, A Squadron, 4 Troop, always thought they were at the front.
No,
did you start to feel that 2 Troops, you know, C Squadron were at the front of everything?
Oh, we always thought that C Squadron were at the front, but I believe I'm right in saying that A Squadron had nearly as many casualties as we did. In terms of personnel killed, I mean.
And you were still with 2 Troop, I forgot to
yeah,
ask you again.
Le
Mans was running 2
yeah,
Troop. So, Veer, not much of an action
no,
as far as you were
concerned.
What's the next thing you do remember?
Well, yeah, this was. I should have gone back there. I can't go back now. We had a little incident involved Don Molyneux before he was killed. And,
well, we'll drop that in. What was that about?
Well, Dickie Leith, who was then the squadron commander, wanted a tank to stay behind for some reason or another in a place called Brettville, I think it was.
Called?
Brettville, 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 or Gilead, or something of that sort. My French is dreadful. And somewhere about a mile away, half a mile away from this village, there was a Sherman tank, which appeared to be intact. I think it was a 17-pounder Firefly. And I was asked, Don and I were asked if we would go out in the dead of night to pick up this tank, and if it was drivable, we'd drive it back. So I elected to drive, and Don elected to command the thing. So we took a compass bearing on this tank, and when it was nighttime, we walked across this field, mounted. I managed to start the engine, and on a reverse compass bearing, we went back to where we started from, which was fine. And there was a young officer from a tank replacement squadron, a lieutenant with a driver with a 1,500-weight truck. And he said, "Well, would you like to follow us to the tank replacement squadron?" So with a tiny little light, and there was tracer bullets flying to the south of us all the way and explosions, we followed this 1,500-weight truck, and in the dawn the next morning, or just after dawn, got to this tank replacement squadron, where we were congratulated by the major commanding it, outstanding devotion to duty or something daft like that. No, he was very pleased to have gained himself a 17-pounder tank in perfect condition. Why the crew had abandoned it, I have no idea.
Were you aware of fireflies? Because that was they were the ones with the bigger gun.
The 17-pounder,
you had them. You never had
one per troop. I was never on one, no.
Were you aware that they were much better?
Yeah, I was aware their gun was much better, yes.
Would you have wanted one? Because they were also a bigger target. The Germans, I believe, tended
to... No, the same chassis. Yeah.
But if they could see the gun...
Yeah.
Was the gun...
No, it was a much longer cannon, obviously. But that was another disadvantage of the Sherman. It had too high a profile.
Can you talk about that a bit?
It was too tall. I mean, the Americans liked their comfort, and there was probably a bit too much space in the damn thing. Certainly in the turret, let's put it that way. The turret was too high.
Do you think that made you easier to hit then?
Yes.
More visible?
Yeah. Another friend of mine, Les Lyons, was killed in one, and the periscope was up here like this, and the 88 minute went through and took his head off. And that was in the Ardennes, though. That was a long time after that.
Now, what's the next action you remember? You know, moving forward from the Vier, not much action at Vier.
The Fallet Gap, as far as I remember.
What happened there then? Was this when they were actually on the faster advance?
It was when the German, whatever army number it was, had virtually collapsed, and they were streaming eastwards as fast as they could. And we were ordered to try and stop them. So I remember the troop going through, I think it was the Forêt de Gouffern, Gouffern Forest. And there was ammunition piled high there, and suddenly there was Lamont was driving across a track, and he looked to his right, and there was a panther coming up. So we retreated rather rapidly and called upon the Air Force. They had Typhoons. We had an almost a taxi service of rocket firing Typhoons. So a Typhoon or a couple of Typhoons destroyed the thing. We resumed the advance and got to some open ground. And there were German soldiers running around with their hands in their air, you know, Kamerad.
Just before we get this business of calling up the Typhoon, that was something that you'd do as a matter of course if you spotted a panther or a Typhoon.
Well, your OC or the commanding officer could call them up and they'd be there within a minute or two.
That must have made it...
Oh, there was an air liaison officer, by the way, an RAF liaison officer attached to the regiment, as far as I remember.
And would you always request it if you saw a... was it just when you saw a tiger or a panther, or was it anyway if you saw tanks?
Not always, no, but if we were in a dicey position, we would... That was the only time I remember a Typhoon being called up on our behalf, on C Squadron's behalf.
What did you think of the tiger and the panther?
They were formidable weapons, very formidable.
Were you aware of their armour strength?
Yes, we more or less had an idea that they were, to our guns, pretty well impregnable. You could get them from the side or the back. You wouldn't get them from the front.
And what about the Mark IV?
Well, when it was armed with a long barrel, high-velocity long-barreled 75, it was a very capable tank. I doubt if it was very much more heavily armoured than a Sherman, but its gun was better with the long 75.
But you were aware that... So that's all their tanks were, in a sense. One was roughly equal and the other two were superior.
Yeah.
As far as you were concerned, that was the state of affairs.
The only advantage a Sherman had over the Tiger was speed. And I don't think speed was ever... It should have been used, but it wasn't used as it should have been. It's easy to talk in hindsight, isn't it?
So, you're saying you move forward, you came across German infantry. What happened then?
Well, again, Lamont was in the turret, and he suddenly called to me, traverse right, Bob, for Christ's sake, traverse right. And there was a panther tank bearing down on us. I couldn't move the controls. Something had jammed the turret. I couldn't move the controls. Oh, Christ, he said, driver reverse, driver reverse. So he pulled back, and the Panther commander, he was too damn keen, I don't blame him, to go east. He didn't even see us, as far as I remember, and the gun never traversed in our direction. I saw him flash past, but he didn't engage us.
Would you open fire on the infantry? Well, with the surrender anyway?
Well, you know what Lamont was? I would have been very loath to do it, like shooting fish in a barrel. But I've been ordered to do so, yes. I have opened fire on them.
But no, I mean, on that particular occasion...
Well, they were all running around with their hands up. They were all surrendering.
So there was no question of opening fire on them at that point. We'll perhaps come to later on where Lamont was a bit more harsh on them. Anything else? Was there a lot of abandoned German equipment?
Oh, God, yes. That was Well, it's quite apart from the dead animals, you know, all sort of bloated with their legs sticking up in the air and the stink and the flies. Millions of pounds of German equipment was abandoned. Staff cars, tanks, armored cars, you name it, bicycles.
You were aware it was a victory then?
Yeah.
Did you think at the time it was going to be that the main job was done, that it would be an advance to Germany, or how did you feel about
it? We thought that the end was near. It wasn't, of course, because of the von Rundstedt attack in the Ardennes, but we thought then that the war was nearly... We thought it would be over by Christmas.
And what was your overall morale like as a unit? You knew you were fighting in tanks that would catch fire.
Yeah. It was good. It wasn't bad. I mean, there were one or two cases, which I'll tell you about if you want to, but...
What, then or later?
Later. Shortly afterwards.
Had you done anything about strengthening the Sherman's armour?
They put plates about this square on the side.
About 3 foot?
2 foot? That, 2 foot. And that was to protect the driver and the co-driver. I don't think they put anything on the turret, but we did hang spare tracks around all the vulnerable points, which didn't do much good.